Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Saving money on everything now at Menards. Create fresher, cleaner air with damp-rid products. Control the humidity in your space with a hanging bag moisture absorber. They're great for closets and laundry rooms. Grab a 3-pack on sale through September 8th. Save big on damp-rid moisture absorbers at Menards. America's number one home improvement retailer for customer satisfaction according to J.D. Power. Visit jdpower.com for details and menards.com for deals.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Tuesday, June 4th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at SlashFilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right, Ryan, we have a ton of news to talk about today. This is going to be kind of like a temp check episode. I'm just going to encourage everyone, if you're interested in any of these topics, to visit the links that I've put in the show notes, because there's going to be much more there. We don't have time to do like a deep dive into every single one of these news stories. But man, there's a lot to talk about. So the new Predator movie from Dan Trachtenberg has cast its leading lady, and that is going to be Elle Fanning. So what do you make of her starring in this movie called Badlands, which is supposed to be a standalone new Predator film?
Truth be told, I cannot actually remember the last time I saw Elle Fanning in a thing. Like, I was trying to remember, but I think it's a fun choice. Like, she's great, and, you know, I love Super 8, you know, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just like, whatever, as good as Prey was, unless he casts someone I absolutely hate, I'm all in on this no matter what happens. Like, that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, there's still a lot of questions about, like, when exactly this place takes place on the timeline, or, like, what era it's supposed to be set in, or what kind of crossover potential, if any, there might be with other Predator stories and things like that. It's supposed to be a standalone project, but, like, Prey, for example, had like that little Easter egg for, I think it was the gun that was in Predator 2 or something like that. So, you know, there are little opportunities for Trachtenberg to sort of draw this universe together, because he's been put in charge. I think we talked about this on the podcast when it happened, but it was announced a little while back that he's been put in charge of sort of expanding and developing a whole Predator universe of projects. So that includes Prey 2, which is still in the works, and that's going to be a direct sequel with Amber Midthunder potentially returning for that. So that one's still, you know, in the early days. We don't have that one, you know, like locked in or with a green light or anything yet, but it certainly seems like Badlands, this new Predator movie with Elle Fanning, is certainly you know, in the works and like has the green light and is getting ready to move ahead. So
I'm a little skeptical on Prey 2 actually happening at any point. Like, it's already been 2 years. I don't know. It's like sequels take so long these days, but we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. So Venom 3, the new trailer for the next Venom film, came out yesterday. You and I were talking about this a little bit offline. I've never seen any of the Venom movies. What's your relationship with those Venom films?
It's not complicated, but it's not good. they're from a different time. They're that period between Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 comic book movies, you know, like pre-Iron Man comic book movies, where they're like, you know, your Daredevils, your Elektras, your like, they're, it's those movies, and they're not good. I some people love them. That's fine. I think the second one was slightly better than the first for, I don't know. For some reason, it pinged something in my brain where I'm like, oh no, am I going to watch this? Like, I had something about it. Like, it looks like almost like maybe they embrace the wackiness just enough here, or maybe it'll be fun. I don't know, but we'll see.
All right. I encourage people to go check out. We have an article about the trailer itself, and then Jeremy Mathai wrote an article talking about how it basically makes the multiverse that Marvel is working on even more confusing, because the history of the Venom franchise and where Venom has sort of popped up in different points on the multiverse, and then what we see in this trailer basically raises a lot of questions. So check out that article if you want to learn more about that. Ryan, I'm hoping you can tell me in a somewhat concise manner what's going on with Paramount Pictures these days.
I believe we've talked about this a little bit on previous episodes, but so Paramount Pictures, after much discussion, will be merging with another company. It's not an outright acquisition in the way that, like, when Disney bought Fox, it's a little different. But basically what happened is Skydance Media, the company behind franchises such as Mission Impossible, the G.I. Joe films, the more recent Terminator films, they have, along with some private equity firm, are merging with Paramount. So it's a complicated deal, but it's all but done. As of this recording, Paramount's shareholder meeting is taking place today, and it's expected to be confirmed during that meeting. But yeah, Sherry Redstone, who is the controlling shareholder, their parent company, National Amusements, like, Sherry Redstone owns that. So basically what's going to happen is, like, Skydance and this Redbird Capital company, they're going to buy out Sherry Redstone from, you know, the attractions company, and then they're going to buy a lot of Paramount's B-level stock. So, like, everyone who already owns stock will just retain their stock. It's like a complicated stock deal, but basically one of Paramount's best partners for the last 15 years, they've been making movies together since 2009, will be, again, not like a new owner, but they're just going to be one company. So this is, Skydance is a production company. They're not like a Hollywood studio. There's a bit of a difference. So this is better than the Sony deal, I believe we discussed a couple of weeks ago, where you would have taken the number of major Hollywood studios down from 5 to 4. This is just a production company merging with a studio, so it kind of probably shores up both companies a little better for the future, I would guess.
But do you know if there's any indication that David Ellison, who runs Skydance, is going to become like the new CEO of Paramount? Because like they're the, I guess, previous CEO got pushed out in favor of this sort of,
yeah.
I think they're calling it the office of the CEO.
They which are is
like a triumvirate of executives basically who lead up different departments of the creative aspects of Paramount and the business aspects and things like that. They're currently in charge. Do you know if Ellison is supposed to take over once this merger happens?
There's very little has been said. So yesterday it was like CNBC broke the news. So it wasn't even like, you know, it hasn't been announced yet by the company. So we will learn a lot more. Like, that's why I'm like, today it's not even worth talking about a ton.
Yeah.
Like, it's happening for sure. You should be aware of that. But it's also going to, like, I think it's going to impact like the average consumer a lot less than like when Warner Media and Discovery merged, because, like, again, it's just a production company that already largely worked with Paramount. So, like, it's a bit of a different situation.
Yeah. You're not going to get like a whole new bunch of all the reality show stuff swerving into your existing streaming service, like what happened with Max, for example.
But I do think, to your point, I think it's likely that Ellison probably takes over as CEO. If I had money to gamble with, that's what I would do. But I don't know. But to your point, Bob Backish, who was their previous CEO, was ousted in early April. He resigned kind of as classily as he could. That's kind of where it stands. So for now, that's what we can tell you, but I'm sure within the week we'll have more to talk about.
Okay. Yeah. My current takeaway on this, without having delved into it, is that this seems like a pretty decent outcome for all of this chaos that's been surrounding Paramount. Like, it certainly could be worse from the sense that I get.
It was the best of a bad situation, for sure. Like, I think if the Sony deal had happened, it probably wouldn't have gotten regulatory approval and it would have been a mess along the way. It's Paramount. I didn't realize how bad their stock had dropped and how much the value had dropped. Like, the deal's valued at $8 billion and like Amazon bought MGM for 8.5.
Yeah.
And it's crazy to me that MGM was somehow worth more than Paramount. So I don't know. That's like wild. But anyway, so that's kind of where it stands.
Okay. The next thing here is I just wanted to basically put out a public service announcement that Godzilla Minus One is now streaming on Netflix. That was a
Hell
surprise.
Yeah, it is.
As soon as I think the calendar flipped over into June, there was a surprise drop for, I think it's available on digital as well, but it's streaming on Netflix right now. So you've probably seen people talking about this on social media, but if you have not, and you heard us talking about Godzilla Minus One, particularly Ryan, who loves both of us love the movie, but you're like head over heels for it. Now's your chance to catch up with it on Netflix. So I don't
know.
Can
I make a very quick plea?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Okay, so look, I know that a lot of people listening, like, you might not be a Godzilla person. You might have seen, like, you know, Godzilla King of the Monsters or something or whatever, and you've said, this isn't really for me. I assure you, even if Godzilla has historically not been your thing, this might not be what you think it is. It is just an excellent piece of cinema, and I'm not even saying that just as a hardcore Godzilla fan. It truly is an excellent, excellent film. I think in the same way that The Dark Knight sort of transcends the superhero thing, I believe this movie transcends like the monster movie genre. So please, even if it's not your thing, give this movie a shot.
100%. Yes. All right. So next up, I was super surprised to hear that the movie Coherence is getting a sequel. This film came out in 2014. I talked about it not too long ago on an episode of this podcast because I just watched it for the first time. It's a really, really low budget sci-fi movie, kind of a mind-bending sci-fi film about a group of people, and there's a comet that passes overhead and something happens. Their reality is sort of shifted in a really interesting way. And evidently the director and writer, James Ward Burkitt, is now developing a sequel. Apparently a bunch of people have come to him over the years with ideas for and pitches and stuff like that for sequels and remakes and spinoffs, and nothing has really sparked him creatively until he got this email from a producer named Kate Andrews. And evidently Andrews sent him two words that unlocked the new pitch. And we don't know what those two words are, and plot details are being kept secret here. So we don't know if it's going to be like a direct sequel or a prequel or an alternative, like a multiverse kind of story or something like that. But he is going to be coming back to direct, and he's going to write the script along with Alex Manoogian. I believe that's how you say his name, who co-wrote the original film with him. So I'm just like shocked that this is happening, because Coherence is a really, really small movie, but evidently it has a pretty strong cult following, and I'm just kind of like interested and intrigued and excited to see what happens in a return to this world. So have you seen Coherence, Ryan?
No, but I'll tell you this, it has been on my list for a long, long time, because it like it's one of those movies that like has been showing up on like great sci-fi movie lists or whatever, like for years now. Mm-hmm. And it's just one of those ones, you know how it is in this business. If you get caught, if you get behind, it is so hard to like catch up on old stuff. But this has now rocketed up my list of things I am absolutely going to watch. Because I'm very intrigued by a sequel to this happening now.
Yeah. Yeah. So curious about that. Okay. Next up, a 300 prequel TV show is in the works, and Zack Snyder is going to be directing this. So I don't know, Ryan, like, what are your thoughts on Zack Snyder returning to TV and returning to this franchise that kind of helped establish him as this like visionary filmmaker in Hollywood. I mean, the first 300 came out in 2007. There's been another movie since then that most people forgot about. I didn't even see. 300 Rise of an Empire was the name of that movie, which I think itself was a prequel. So now there's going to be a TV prequel. What do you make of all this?
How honest do I want to be? What is it? I love, so I bought the original 300. Fun fact, I saw that movie on the day I got my driver's license. But I bought the 4K of that not long ago when I popped in. That movie is still awesome. Like, I don't care how like bro-y that sounds. That movie's so good. I think you and I have talked a bit about Rebel Moon on this podcast and how like it's crazy how little impact it seems to have made. Like, I know the streaming numbers were okay, but it's certainly not what Netflix wanted. There was like a bunch of clearance merchandise at Walmart. Like, that movie just made no impact.
Yeah.
So here's my thing. After the Justice League stuff, like, Warner Brothers is not eager to work with Zack Snyder right now. And I think that probably bled over into some other studios. I think his Netflix deal has expired and I'm not certain they're going to like re-up with him or anything. What choice does he have? Like, he has to do something super safe to try to just like grease the wheels again, right? And like, prequel TV show to movie that previously was very successful, probably something you could easily sell to a streamer or a studio. It's not a movie, it's a show. You know what I mean? I think like it's the kind of thing he probably has to do right now. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he could do something low budget somewhere, whatever. But like, if he wants to stay in the big game, this might be the only way to do it for the moment.
I'm worried about, well, I mean, you know, worried is too strong of a term. Everybody involved with this is going to be fine, probably, but including and especially Zack Snyder. But just the idea of a 300 prequel, once again, it's that whole prequelitis thing. We know where the story is going. Do we really need to see all of this, you know, stretched out in TV format? Like, this seems like a decision that would have been made 5 years ago or 8 years ago or something, when everything was like, when Hollywood was dumping money into whatever projects they could, especially IP related stuff. You know, if there's any familiarity at all, like, let's just kind of like throw caution to the wind. As long as it has name recognition, let's go for it. Let's invest in these projects. Let's give a bunch of filmmakers a bunch of money to make these projects that hopefully something will like latch on in the public consciousness or whatever. And it seems like Hollywood has kind of shifted away from that a little bit. I'm not saying that IP is no more. Of course, that's still the driving force in the business, but it just kind of seems like the attitude has shifted a little bit in the ways that in the green lights and stuff across all these different companies that have been given out. And this just feels like an old decision to me, but I don't know.
Somewhat, but I also think that like right now, if I remember correctly, there's no streamer attached or anything yet. I think it's Snyder sort of setting this up.
I think Warner Brothers is developing it with him, but I don't know if that means if it's going to be like a Max thing or if it's
But we know that Warner Brothers is selling projects all over the place now. Like, they have several Batman things on Prime, you know, like, it's not it's not like Warner Brothers is saying, all right, cool. This is my guess. Warner Brothers is like, all right, Zach, go ahead, develop this thing. Like, we'll give you our blessing because it's just sitting here. But like, we're not necessarily committed to the idea that like, Max isn't making a commitment to this, right? They're like,
yeah,
we'll let you develop it. But like, you know, if it might not be our money, dude, like, take it somewhere, you know, like that's yeah. So I don't know. Like, we'll see. I just, that's my thing is like, it's not like, cause that's the thing. It is a Warner Brothers property, right? Like, they could have just said, hell yeah, let's put this on Max, and they're not. So like, at least
yeah,
not
and
right
maybe
in the beginning.
It's unclear to me too, if it's like a Warner Brothers television thing where like, because that's a whole different entity that makes content for, and sorry to use the word content, that was I should never use that word. But they make shows and stuff to sell to a bunch of different networks and things like that too. So it's you know, just the fact if it's Warner Brothers television that's in development with
that's
this
true
versus
that's true.
Warner Brothers the studio, then I guess that's a different calculus.
But anyway. I don't know exactly how this stuff works, but couldn't it, like, because it's Warner Brothers ultimately that owns the property, so like, they could have probably developed it at Max. Like, I don't know how that works, but it's like, if they decided to develop it at Warner Brothers television, then that choice would signal to me, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's a little different how they decide to develop it. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious about it, I guess. I'll say that much.
Well, speaking of prequel shows and speaking of Max, the It prequel series is in the works. I want to say it's called Welcome to Derry. That was the title that was being kicked around for a while. I'm not sure if that actually stuck, but Bill Skarsgård is returning to play Pennywise the Clown. I don't really have any extra insights or observations about this. I know the show is going to be set in the 60s. It makes sense because the Pennywise character is basically like this ageless, weird alien creature, basically. Like it's a creature outside of our normal understanding of time and space. So, and as we saw in the It films, like this creature has been around for a long time and taken a bunch of different forms and things like that. So it makes sense for Bill Skarsgård to come back. I don't know. Do you have any like hot takes about this, Ryan?
I think it's interesting that it took them so long to announce this. Like they've been filming the show for a while. I think it's also interesting. Like, and one of the big things that Bill Skarsgård is coming on as an executive producer as well. He's not just being in the show. And I'm wondering if they had a hard time convincing him to come back. Because yeah, again, this has been in like, that might've been a good selling point. Like when they announced the show. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I can't imagine they only just now started talking to him. But yeah, I mean, we'll see. Me and Eric Vespi and may he rest in peace, Scott Wampler, spent like almost an hour on the KingCast about a year ago talking about what are they going to do with Pennywise? Cause Bill Skarsgård isn't attached. And so I love, the first It was my favorite movie of 2017, and I am a It Chapter 2 defender. So I am all aboard for the show, as even as a guy who doesn't watch TV. And I just couldn't imagine it without him. So I'm just happy.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the fact that his career has really ballooned since then. He's gotten a lot of different cool opportunities to go out and do a bunch of things. And the idea of him, you know, basically like popping back in here and there for a prequel show makes sense and seems like a smart move on everybody's part. It doesn't necessarily lock him in into being, you know, the star of the show or whatever. He has freedom to go out and do other things. So I think this is a good move.
Well, it's sort of like the Robert Pattinson School of Filmmaking, right? Where like you get your franchise, you make your money, and then you do whatever the hell you want. So he makes his It money and then he can go make Boy Kills World or Barbarian or do whatever the hell he wants. Like he can do these weird things because his career is such that, you know, he can.
Yeah. Okay. Chris Hemsworth has jumped from the animated Transformers movie. He's providing a voice for Transformers 1, the new movie that's coming out later this year. And now he's going to be in the live action G.I. Joe Transformers crossover film. Unclear if he's going to be playing Optimus Prime, the same voice that he's doing for the animated movie, or like if he's taking over that voice from Peter Cullen, who is the longtime voice of that character, or if he's going to be playing a G.I. Joe soldier or something. But I think you were a fan of the most recent Transformers film. If memory serves, you were like kind of excited about the idea of this crossover happening. So what do you make of Hemsworth jumping into the fray here?
Let me be crystal clear. I love Transformers Rise of the Beast. That was like, and I have the unpopular opinion now having rewatched Bumblebee recently that I actually like Rise of the Beast more than Bumblebee. This Chris Hemsworth thing is strange to me because I sincerely doubt that Peter Cullen won't come back as Optimus Prime because like it wouldn't really make sense at this point to trade voices, especially because Chris Hemsworth voice in Transformers 1 doesn't sound anything like Cullen. So like since this is taking place in the same continuity, like changing voices that dramatically would be an odd thing to do. My guess is that he's playing like a G.I. Joe. I don't know. So it's kind of interesting that like he'll be on both sides of the franchise in very different ways. I only recently really realized that Chris Hemsworth, and we talked about this, like is not a great box office bet outside of Thor. Like So I don't know. It's interesting that Hollywood keeps sort of treating him like one of these stars that deserves like $20 million paydays or whatever. And the sort of numbers are stacked against him at this point. So it's interesting that they came to him for this. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I sort of see why you do it like after the Extraction movies and stuff, but like, I'm sure his quote is huge at this point. So I don't know.
I was looking at his IMDb the other day and completely forgot that he was in Men in Black International, that just completely vanished from my memory. I mean, I never saw it, but like just the fact that the film exists at all was kind of shocking.
Did we not talk about this on the podcast that his hits outside of, you know, the MCU are almost none as a leading man.
I think we did. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like
the extraction movies, you know, that's like a hit on a different level. Like you can't really compare that because of the sort of secrecy with Netflix's numbers and things like that. But
I'm of the opinion that Extraction would have been a theatrical hit, but other than that, like Snow White and the Huntsman, Star Trek, technically, cause he's in it for a second. And then Men in Black International is his next highest grossing movie. And that was a complete flop. Then Ghostbusters, which was a complete flop. You know, Huntsman Winter's War, flop, Furiosa, big flop, like just very few hits outside. So it's odd to me that he, you know, is sort of viewed as this, but I love him. So I'm like, let's go. But it's just interesting that like from the business side that he keeps getting those calls.
Yeah. The only thing to go back to your earlier point, the only reason that I could imagine that he might be taking over as the voice of Optimus Prime is that Peter Cullen is 82 years old now and will be 83 at the end of the month. So, you know, maybe he's just like, I can't do that gravelly, growly voice anymore or something. That's pure speculation on my part. He could continue to do that for the next 20 years. I have no idea, but.
Oh, please. Well, because I told you, I just went and saw that Transformers 40th anniversary thing and he just did like, you know, optimistic. Like, he still seems pretty spry. So I would think this would maybe be Cullen's last ride though. Like if he does this, like, I don't know, but yeah, we'll see. I'm curious about where this is all going. Like I'm into the movie, but we'll see.
Another thing you're curious about is the new Jurassic World movie from director Gareth Edwards. And that movie has now found yet another star. We knew that Scarlett Johansson was going to be in that cast. And now Mahershala Ali is going to be in that film. And this is the movie that is basically going to be filming pretty soon in order to make its release date of next year.
Yep.
So next summer, in fact. So this kind of puts the Blade movie in a weird position because a lot of people have been waiting for that Blade film for years and years now. And it seems like that wait is going to continue. But what do you make of Mahershala heading over into the Jurassic franchise?
Two-time Oscar winner Mahershala Ali in Jurassic World. Hell yes. Like this movie, I have no reason to be this optimistic after what happened with Dominion, but like every single thing they keep saying, I'm like, oh my God. Like, and if any of the rumors are to be believed about the potential title plot, like I'm so into it. And just like, I don't know, like I want a Blade movie. It is crazy to me that Marvel cannot get a script done for that movie. It is a dude killing vampires. And I just don't know how that's that hard. I'm of the opinion now with this movie happening, I don't think Blade is happening, or at least not with Mahershala Ali. I think he's not going to make the movie. That's what I think. But if there was one thing that could get me excited about him not doing that, because I really would love to see that. I think that was one of the perfect castings of our generation that will go completely wasted. Hell yeah. Let's let Mahershala Ali fight some dinosaurs. I'm all for that. Like, let's go.
Man, I really hope that he ends up sticking with the Blade film, because like you said, that is such perfect casting. And just the idea of him being attached to that project for so long and being sort of an architect of revamping the story a bunch of times, if my memory serves, like there were several reports.
Well, sorry, I won't say it.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's just more like the reports have been like, yeah, he's getting involved. And I think it's more what my read on that has been. He's been developing this thing for like 5 years with Marvel. He's like, guys, what the hell? Like, you know, I get the sense that if he had had his way, he would have just brought in a writer. They would have cooked up the story and they would have had this thing shot already. Like, I think that's my guess.
All right. Well, yeah, fingers crossed he sticks around, because casting is just like so good to leave on the table. But,
the only thing I'll say is he's 50 years old now. He was like 45 when this was announced. And there is a big difference between starting this sort of endeavor when you're 45 and starting this endeavor when you're 50. Yeah. And, you know, I'm not trying to be ageist or anything, but I think from a guy looking at his career, you have to sort of think of it that way. And so that's all I'll say.
Yeah. Okay. A Just Cause movie is still in the works. Now this film has a new director in the form of Ángel Manuel Soto, who previously directed Blue Beetle. Just Cause is a video game that is basically about causing as much chaos as possible. It's about like a secret agent, for lack of a better term, like a field operative who goes into a international country to basically cause as much chaos on behalf of the U.S. government as possible, like overthrow radical governments and things like that. It's mostly like you can jump on a gas canister and shoot it with a gun and it blasts you forward and you can ride on it like a maniac and like shoot a parachute up into the air and use a grappling hook to hook onto a car and fly behind it like you're a parasail. Like, just if you watch gameplay video from the Just Cause series, it's like the most insane stuff you could ever imagine. So I'm curious what this looks like from an action movie perspective, because the thing that, you know, we've all been talking about, any action movie fan has been talking about for the past 20 years or whatever, is like with the advent and sort of explosion of CGI, the whole thing about physics and like when characters are doing things that, you know, the human body can't do, the eye can tell. Like you inherently know as a human being, okay, nobody can actually do that, which is why movies like the Tom Cruise things and even Extraction to a degree and John Wick and stuff like that have popped as much as they have, because you know people are actually getting set on fire and doing those stunts that they're purporting to actually be doing. So this movie has such chaos built as its foundation that I'm just really curious to see what kind of stuff they commit to doing for real and whether or not they can retain any sense of gravity and physics and things like that, or if this movie is just going to be a live action cartoon, which could be fun in its own way.
I think this should be like a live action cartoon with like a character who, like, I think like it should be like a character who, like, the lead character should be like, this dude lives in the real world and he's in a cartoon. Like, that's what I feel like makes Just Cause as a movie sort of work, where you have some like gritty, serious protagonist in like an absolute just nonsense world. Like, I think that would be kind of fun. And I think after Blue Beetle, this is a good, because Blue Beetle felt like a movie that came too late, but the action and the characters and stuff felt very lived in and very good. So I love the director pick for this.
Okay, excellent. So yeah, speaking of superheroes, Captain America Brave New World has undergone some reshoots and Giancarlo Esposito has joined that movie as a new villain. There's been a lot of rumors about this film for really months at this point. 22 days of reshoots is the latest report of what is going to be happening here. And my understanding is that Giancarlo Esposito is going to be a villain that was not attached to or a part of the movie at all in its previous incarnation, but now these reshoots are going to essentially fold him in and make him a key part of this story that they're telling with this film. So, you know, who knows how all of this turns out. We're going to find out relatively soon. February 14th, 2025 is the release date. So you can go to the website and read the article there. There's a lot more to get into that we just don't have time because we have so much other news to talk about.
We're running through here.
Speaking of that, you can also check out slashfilm.com for a bunch more about Wake Up Dead Man, which is Rian Johnson's new movie. We talked a little bit about that on a previous episode of the show, I think last week when that was announced. And now there are a bunch more cast members. So we have Kaylee Spaney, Josh Brolin, Josh O'Connor, Andrew Scott, Daniel Craig returning as Benoit Blanc, of course, Jeremy Renner, Mila Kunis, Glenn Close, Kerry Washington, and Daryl McCormick is the lineup as of right this second. And then BJ Colangelo wrote a great article about her headline is "Every Knives Out 3 cast member has one thing in common and it could hint at the plot." And this was published a few days before some of these folks were added to the cast list, but I still think BJ's theory here holds true, and it's a really enticing and intriguing theory about what this movie might actually be about. I'm not going to spoil that here.
You should definitely read BJ's piece, because it got me thinking, because the only thing I didn't even realize when Jeremy Renner was cast, I was like, oh, that's cool, and then I forgot about his hot sauce and Glass Onion.
Yeah,
like they had Jeremy, so I'm almost positive Jeremy Renner just must be playing Jeremy Renner in the movie. Like, there, Rian Johnson doesn't seem like the type to just ignore something like that. So yeah. So that makes it very interesting. Like, if you have an actor playing themselves in this movie.
Yeah, that could definitely be a lot of fun. So certainly looking forward to Wake Up Dead Man whenever that comes out. I think that's gearing up for shooting like very soon. It's supposed to come out next year, if I have my dates correct.
You are correct, sir.
Okay, so let's take a break and then we'll be right back. And we have a lot more to talk about.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
You need parts? O'Reilly Auto Parts has parts. Need them fast? We've got fast. No matter what you need, we have thousands of professional parts people doing their part to make sure you have it. Product availability. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, Ryan, you recently went to the ATX Festival there in Austin. I'm going to have you walk me through some of the highlights of some of the panels and stuff that you attended. But before we do that, we got to mention Mike Flanagan's Exorcist movie. So I think when we talked about this on the podcast previously, it was still kind of like up in the air as to whether or not it was actually going to happen. And I remember Yes. you saying, like, you know, if he has a really interesting take or something, then I'm excited to see this. And now we know that this actually is happening. And this is not going to be a sequel to The Exorcist Believer, which was the David Gordon Green movie that came out last year that was widely panned and did not necessarily perform as well as it should have, given the $400 million price tag for the rights to make this trilogy that Universal was going to be working on. So now Mike Flanagan officially has the reins of this franchise. He's going to be making a new Exorcist movie that is not going to have anything to do with Exorcist Believer. So what do you make of that?
I tell you the crazy, I've been doing this a while. I've read a lot of press releases. It was wild to me that in the official press release sent out by Blumhouse, they're like, it is not a sequel to Exorcist Believer. Like, it's crazy that they were putting out that messaging that firmly this quickly. Like, they that says so much to me. I don't know. I mean, I can't recall seeing something that, like, you know, because it's messaging you'd think the studio would want to dance around a little bit. Like, but yeah, I don't know.
The stink from the previous movie must be so strong that they're just like, all right, right out of the gate, we just want to make this as clear as possible that you don't have to have seen that movie. We know that everyone thinks it's bad. Let's just forget that that ever happened and hand this franchise over to a guy who is one of the most beloved filmmakers in the entire horror community right now.
Yeah, I think Flanagan is maybe the guy. You know, you got Flanagan, maybe James Wan, depending on what he's doing that day.
Guillermo del Toro.
Guillermo does, I think, like, if you're talking like guys who almost work strictly in the genre, Flanagan's right near the top right now.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I don't know. And again, it's what I said before, but if people didn't listen to the episode, the thing that I would say is this, and I tweeted this, whatever, but I can't get it out of my head. I understand if you are Universal, if you are Blumhouse, why you need Mike Flanagan to make this movie. I have zero idea why Flanagan needs to make this movie. Like, I don't, he could kind of do a lot of things. And it's weird to me that this is what he's choosing to do. And I just hope that it's not for money. Like, I hope, because he's probably getting a bag. Like, he's getting, you know, they probably dumped the money truck up to him. And I just hope, I believe in Mike Flanagan so firmly that I believe he must have a reason to make this movie. But I just hope it's the right decision.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about ATX. Like, what was your experience like at this year's festival, and what kind of interesting stuff did you get up to there?
So ATX Festival is not like a festival anyone is begging me to do. Usually it is the ATX Television Festival. This was the 13th edition of it. This is my third or fourth one. I think it was my fourth. It's a great little festival for anyone that hasn't, and I'm not even a big TV guy, but what I love about it is it mostly takes place at this little cool old hotel in downtown Austin called the Driscoll. And there's all these like nice little like meeting rooms that they set them up in. And some of these panels only have like 30 seats where you're just like sitting in there and watching, you know, creators talk about their things. And I love doing it. I love doing it for that reason. Like, I don't even really go to any of the screenings for the most part. Like, they sometimes do, you know, premieres of new TV shows and stuff, but I just go to watch the panels of these creators I really like talking about stuff. And it's a ton of fun. And so Flanagan actually was a guest at a couple of these panels I attended, and kind of proved pretty fruitful and interesting.
So what were a couple of the things that interested you that he had to say?
So he talked a little bit about, you know, the Exorcist movie, which obviously you can't say a lot about right now, but I think a couple of things that he said, and it was at two different panels, but he was on a panel about like adapting books for the screen. And then he was on another one that it was just him about, like, you know, monologues, because he's known for his monologues and his projects. And so at the first one, he talked about just being just terrified about, you know, taking on the material and excited and all, you know, all that. It wasn't a lot, but I think the somewhat meatier thing was that he, at the monologue one, he's like, the Exorcist movie won't have my like trademark monologues in it. Like, it's meant to just be like scary. Let's move things along. And so that was interesting that he's not going to sit there and have like these, you know, some big like 5-minute character moment. You know, he sort of, so that indicates, because that's like one of his trademarks at this point. So that's kind of interesting to me that he's, you know, ensuring that that's not going to be a part of it. I also get the sense that this is already, I don't want to say super far along, but like it seems like they might, because I know they're probably going to do a different script than they had originally had. Like, The Exorcist Deceiver was what the sequel was going to be called. I imagine they're developing something entirely, but it seems like it might be further along than we might think it is. So yeah, I don't know, that I found that interesting. You know, it was interesting that he was willing to say anything about it at all, because a lot of times at this stage, directors are like, I can't talk about it. I can't talk about it. So I thought it was interesting. And he offered that up without a question, by the way. Like, he just sort of threw that out there. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You also found out that his movie Hush is finally getting a physical media release. So that's exciting
This was actually collectors. A question I asked, like, where I was, is that one of the cutest? Because I love, if you have not seen Hush, unfortunately, it is not available anywhere right now. It left Netflix over a year ago, and it just hasn't been anywhere. So they managed to get the rights back because their deal expired with Netflix or whatever. So Flanagan has been working for over a year, putting together special features and everything else, and he couldn't say who with yet, but they're putting together a physical media release, and it will also be streaming somewhere as well. My guess, if I were to guess, they probably made a deal with one of those like boutique distributors like Arrow, or, you know, maybe like Scream Factory or something, and they're going to do a really nice release for this, and then it'll be on VOD and stuff as well. So hopefully we'll learn more about that soon, but when it happens, please watch Hush. It rules.
Excellent. Okay, so I think the last one that we probably have time to get into is a story called Hollywood's Top TV Execs Are Happy About the Death of Peak TV. Here's Why. So you attended a panel, I think it was called the Presidential Forum panel, and there were a bunch of TV executives on there, and they seemed relieved about the death of Peak TV. What'd they have to say?
Yeah, so this was actually a really cool panel. It was all women, which was cool, and they'd apparently been trying to put this panel together for years, but it was basically like heads of television of most of the major studios. And at one point they were talking about, because there's been a lot of peak TV, meaning like kind of after, you know, like 10 or so years ago, I think, like, where it was just, you know, tons and tons and tons and tons of TV because of Netflix and all these cable channels. And there was like, you know, over 600 shows on TV, and it was just like crazy. And Kelly Burke, the president of 20th Television, you know, under Disney's umbrella, was asked about it. And she just said, you know, it's over. We're on the other side of it. So like, it's not even, she's not even saying like, it's, you know, maybe it's dying, it's done. But she said, I never want to celebrate the loss of an opportunity. I want to say that, but I do think we've all felt the strain of 600 plus television shows in the marketplace, just not being able to get the vitals on them. Things would come and go so quickly. A show that could have been your favorite show, you just never had a chance to see it because there was just too much. And it really was straining resources. And I think tough for the audience and not fair to the creators. So basically what they all ended up agreeing on and talking about is just this idea that like there was too much TV, and the idea of a little bit less in some ways could be more because people actually have a chance to watch these shows. And they all gave, you know, some examples of shows that, you know, came and went that nobody heard of that were really good and might have otherwise found an audience. And so I kind of tended to agree with her reasoning there. Like it, you know, yes, it sucks because like less people will have jobs, less things will be getting made, but it, does it really matter that much if people aren't watching the thing? I'm not really sure. So I think she had a strong point there.
Yeah, we're absolutely in like an unsustainable period of creative output there. And I fully agree. Like my heart goes out to the folks who are not going to have the opportunities that they perhaps would have gotten a few years ago. Of course, that like more frequently affects minorities and people of color and women and things like that, right? Like basically this contraction period is probably just going to default back into giving a bunch more white dudes opportunities that maybe other people would have had access to, you know? So that's like one of the downsides of this sort of contraction that's going to be going on across the industry and is already going on. But yeah, hopefully they can strike a better balance than they did the previous time around. So that's all we can hope for right now, I think, given the sort of shaky stature of whatever the hell is going on in this industry right now.
Agreed.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that's going to do it for the end of for today's episode, actually. I cannot encourage people enough to go click on the links to these stories in the show notes if you want to learn more about all of these, because we really just scratched the surface for all of the stories that we talk about on today's show. So check out slashfilm.com. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.